From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson. Most of our listeners are probably aware of the ongoing Samsung Galaxy Note 7 issue. Earlier this year, the Samsung Galaxy Note 7 was released and soon after started facing problems when some of the phones began catching on fire. Unfortunately, after a recall, some of the replacement phones also started catching on fire, and Samsung has now decided to discontinue the Galaxy Note 7 altogether. This is a major issue for Samsung, and they could be facing up to $17 billion in loss because of the crisis. So this is a really big and important issue for not just Samsung, but for the South Korean economy at large. We've been following this issue really closely here at KEI. So today I have two great internal experts here to talk about Samsung and the Note 7 crisis. First, we have Troy Stangerone, who is KEI's Senior Director for Congressional Affairs and Trade. And we're also joined by Kyle Ferrier, who is the Director of Academic Affairs and Research. Thanks for joining us here, guys.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to be here.
So I'll start with you, Troy. Can you give us a little bit of a backgrounder here? What exactly is going wrong with these phones?
Well, I think first, maybe we should take and put this in context for Samsung. Samsung had been, with Apple, one of the world's leading smartphone vendors. But for about the last 2 years, they had seen declining operating revenue and profit. Now, this year had been largely a success. They had launched a new Galaxy 7 model, as well as the Edge version, both of which sold very well earlier in the year. Operating profits were up. Revenue was up. This fall, they were hoping to catch an advantage on Apple and release the new Galaxy Note 7 ahead of time and, you know, continue this year on a strong footing. Unfortunately, somewhere in the development process, an issue crept up that has taken and caused the phones to catch on fire. Now, it's only been a very small number of the phones, but it's clearly a very serious defect. And so as a result, Samsung took and began a recall process earlier in the year, back in September. But unfortunately, what we've seen recently is there had been reports as well that after they thought they'd resolved the issue, which they believed to be related to the lithium-ion battery, which was larger than in previous phones, that some of the replacement phones may have been catching on fire as well. So in light of this challenge, Samsung made the decision to abandon the Galaxy Note 7.
And what do you think about that decision? Did they make the right decision to, in this case, just, you know, kind of abandon ship?
Well, I think at this point, this was the only decision they could really make. I've been on a few recent business trips, and every time you go to the airport, what you hear is, if you have a Samsung Galaxy Note 7, please power it down. You cannot charge it or use it while on the plane. And so in essence, this was a large, significant reputational risk for Samsung. It's one thing if you have a product recall to, or say, like there had been a software glitch and it needed to be updated, but the phone still ran fine and there wasn't a problem to people. So you weren't getting necessarily public announcements every time people boarded planes. And so because they hadn't been able to resolve this, you ran the risk of weeks or months more of essentially, you know, every airline providing negative press to Samsung. And so given the circumstances and given that the initial fix didn't work, this was probably the only decision they had left to make.
So I want to follow up on that, and I want you to get in on this too, Kyle, but what is the damage here in terms of the reputation? I know that, as you mentioned, every time you get on a plane, and now they're telling people, don't just power it down, don't bring it at all. And then I've seen a lot of friends on Facebook and people on Twitter kind of making exploding phone jokes about the Note 7. So what is the long-term repercussions in terms of the reputation for Samsung here?
Well, I think first, you know, I've never quite understood why people have described it as an exploding phone. They've caught on fire. Now, clearly, catching on fire is not a good thing, but there is a difference between exploding and catching on fire. Now, that being said, you know, in the short term, clearly Samsung is going to take a hit to its reputation. You have a situation to where one has a result of discontinuing the Note 7. Samsung has revised down its operating profits by roughly $2.3 billion. I've seen outside estimates that show it could range anywhere from $10 to $17 billion when all things are said and done. To put this in context, the $2.3 billion is roughly 6% of the North Korean economy. If it were to go up to, say, $17 billion, you're talking about a loss for Samsung that would be roughly half the North Korean economy. So that kind of shows you how different North and South Korea are. But for Samsung specifically, you have the initial loss. You have the loss from basically the holiday shopping season that we're going into, which could take and maybe make it potentially larger. But the bigger concern for Samsung going forward will be how people review their reputation. Will people, one, make a decision that, well, I'm not sure about Samsung products, so rather than buying, you know, the Edge or buying the Galaxy 7, they decide to buy, and it may not necessarily be simply Apple. You know, Samsung has been facing pressure in recent years from cheaper phones that performed, you know, in a similar manner to the Samsung Galaxy line. So it could be people shifting to alternative cheaper models. It could be people shifting to Apple. So you have potentially a loss of those sales and people who may not then buy another phone for another, you know, few years. But, you know, the big challenge for Samsung, I think, going forward is they need the next phone that they have to come out to not only be innovative, but to work exceptionally well to get people to move past the perception that may have become ingrained from the Note 7.
I completely agree, Troy. And I think in the long term, what's most important for them is to bounce back. And clearly, whether this is viewed as a blip on the radar or a trend in a serious concern for the future of the safety of the Samsung products, is really determined by the next line of phones. Consumer loyalty is really important for Samsung and their ability to bounce back. And when you look at the phone catching on fire, it says a lot about the reputation that Samsung has built, that people have come back to get a replacement phone. And even there are stories in the media of once that replacement phone proved to be defective, wanting a third phone. So there's clearly a loyalty built up by Samsung in the market, and that these cheap alternative phones would really have a difficult time taking away market share from Samsung if Samsung were to come out with a strong new release in the near future.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I like your point, Troy, about not only could this be a loss right now, but, you know, people don't necessarily buy phones every couple months. You could be talking 2-3 years between people getting a new phone. And, you know, so anyone who is lost to iPhone or is lost to another brand might not come back to Samsung within the next couple of years, if at all. Once people get ingrained in their operating system, a lot of times they kind of stick with that operating system for at least a couple of phones.
Yeah. And another challenge is that, you know, we all know that Apple basically has a proprietary software system. So anybody who switches to Apple would then have basically the difficulty of how do you shift any information you have on that iPhone now into your new Android phone if you go back to Samsung. So in some ways, those lost customers could potentially, depending on how much they use alternative services, be locked into, you know, another brand. Now, the flip side of this is that, you know, smartphone trends change fairly quickly. You know, some people like myself, I've had my smartphone for about 3.5 years now. Some people, though, on the flip side, change every year. They will constantly want a new model. It's a status symbol for them. So, you know, if the next Samsung model is seen as sleek, top of the line in terms of software and other things, you know, a lot of those customers might shift back rather quickly. But it's really going to be, I think, an issue for them of really demonstrating that they are a top of the line phone again, especially because, you know, the Note 7 was essentially Samsung's most expensive phone ever, and they were clearly trying to compete with Apple on the high-end range and to try and move away from taking and selling a lot of lower-end phones at lower margins.
So one thing that is interesting to keep in mind, too, is that as this crisis is kind of unfolding, Samsung has a new head, the grandson of the original founder of the company. Lee Jae-yong has taken over and taken more power in the company as this crisis is going on. So what, I guess, do you think his impact will be? Do you think he has a different style that can help them ride out this issue? What changes might we see with Samsung, given that it has this new leadership?
Lee Jae-yong has slowly been asserting himself in Samsung over the past year and a half or so. We know that in this specific crisis, he was one of the leading voices to push for, one, the early recall of the phone, and two, after he had read the report that one of the replacement phones had taken and burnt a hole through a Southwest plane's floor, to decide to discontinue the Note 7. So he has been asserting himself into this process. He's also taken and begun a corporate restructuring in terms of streamlining a lot of the management and holding structure, looking to create a new corporate holding structure as well. But he's also made other key divisions. You know, we often focus on Samsung Electronics because, you know, that's what we see a lot, the TVs, the smartphones, but it's a much larger conglomerate. And so he's recently moved to sell off things such as like their solar division, which had been unprofitable, and at the same time is looking for what does the future of Samsung look like. And one of the areas he's focused in on is the biotech area. One of the reasons being that in order to take and produce a lot of the precursor materials you need for biological drugs, you need a clean room similar to what one of Samsung's other very successful industries is, which is the microchip industry. And so he's looking for areas like that that might be natural fits for Samsung to move into in the future. So be it, you know, biotech, be it the Internet of Things. He's looking to sort of reshape the company in a modern 21st century image.
So I want to take this conversation to a little bit of a higher level here. So we're talking about Samsung, which is obviously a huge company in South Korea and is really important to the South Korean economy. What will this particular issue and potentially the repercussions of it mean for the South Korean economy more broadly?
So the media has this tendency to try and draw trends between different developments, which I think is very important. But in this particular circumstance, when the media looks at what's going on with Korean chaebols and looking at Hanjin Shipping and looking at Samsung and trying to connect the two and making a claim that this might signal the end of the chaebol system, the chaebols in Korea, I think it's a bit presumptuous. The nature of the issues facing Samsung and Hanjin Shipping greatly differ both in terms of nature and magnitude. Hanjin Shipping was a company that was mismanaged during a period where growth in global shipping was sluggish, and it has a $5.37 trillion outstanding debt that the Korean government and its creditors and other creditors believe that Hanjin Shipping cannot recoup and successfully, that debt cannot be successfully restructured. Whereas Samsung is facing this momentary difficulty, and as Troy mentioned, we have estimates up to potential loss up to $17 billion, but no one's talking about restructuring Samsung. Everyone is talking about the next, looking to the future into the next new model. So in terms of the repercussions for the structure of the Korean economy, in terms of the chaebols, I just don't particularly see it happening, considering how important these companies are to the Korean economy. Chaebols account for about 0.1% of the total number of companies in the Korean economy, and they account for about 81% of total exports, which is quite high. Samsung alone accounts for 20% of exports in Korea. So if we were to see some sort of a change here, it would have clearly a widespread impact, but I don't see this as being hugely negative for the structure of the Korean economy.
I think the only thing I'd add is, you know, we should keep things in context. The Note line of Samsung phones is not the largest seller in terms of sales for Samsung. If you look even at the worst case scenarios for Samsung, you know, up to, you know, $17 billion lost, keep this in perspective. One, Samsung's initial write down was only a write down of its operating profit. It wasn't that they were actually going to go, you know, into a loss. Two, even if you have the $17 billion or something, worst case scenario, that really is only the equivalent of about, you know, two quarters of operating profit for Samsung. So even if things go as worse as people think it could be for Samsung, you're still only talking about, you know, wiping out maybe half the year's profit. So Samsung will ultimately be fine. They do need to be cognizant of their place in the cell phone industry. You know, it's not that long ago that Nokia was riding high and the preeminent cell phone maker in the world. So, you know, they can't be, you know, lax about this. They need to take it seriously. But that being said, we do need to keep in context that the Note being discontinued isn't going to send Samsung under, and it isn't going to, you know, significantly impact the South Korean economy.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us guys here today. It's obviously an ongoing issue that Samsung's going to have to be wrestling with, and it'll clearly be important for us to keep following this. But before we go, I just want to know if you guys have anything else that you think it's important for our listeners to know about Samsung and about this issue in general.
Just that, as I was saying, you know, we need to keep this difficulty Samsung is facing in context, and not just within its own corporate line, but more broadly within the South Korean economy. When you think about the South Korean economy, while Samsung clearly is a key player within the economy as a whole, South Korea itself faces greater challenges from broader systemic issues, both slowing international trade and declining trade with China. Whenever China's GDP declines by roughly 1% of GDP, you see a slowing down in South Korea of about 0.6%. So at the end of the day, while this clearly is not, especially in conjunction with the Hanjin troubles, necessarily the best thing for the South Korean economy, in the broader context, the global challenges that we face from declining trade and slowing trade in China are much more significant issues, along with domestic economic issues such as high levels of household debt and a slowly declining demographic profile, than anything that Samsung faces at the moment.
Kyle, anything you'd like to say?
So Troy talked about more international systemic issues, but from a domestic standpoint, Samsung and other chaebols, the bigger questions moving forward in terms of the systemic importance and the economic impacts that these chaebols will have is in terms of the challenges that they present to employment and inequality. According to a recent IMF study, Korea suffers from the most income inequality out of all Asian countries, and the problem is even cut across chaebol versus small, medium-sized enterprise lines. The problem is even worse than that. And in terms of employment, I think as mentioned before, 0.1% of the corporate entities in Korea are considered chaebols. They only employ about 12% of the Korean population. So moving forward, getting these companies to employ more individuals within the economy, as well as provide for a more economic and socially inclusive growth, is one of the main challenges moving forward.
Okay. So as I said, we'll be watching this issue closely as it continues to evolve. But I really appreciate you guys taking your time here today to share your insights and share your expertise on Samsung and on chaebols in general.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jenna.
Thanks, everyone, for once again joining us here on Korean Context. If you haven't already done so, please go ahead and subscribe to our podcast. We're available on iTunes, Stitcher, all kinds of different podcast apps. And you can also find us on our website, www.keia.org. We hope you enjoyed this discussion and will join us again next week for another great episode.